All right, so if you were not here last week, it would be helpful if you actually went back to the church website and listened to last week's message, because otherwise, this is going to be part two of a two-part message that, you know, if you don't have the first week's message, then you're not going to really understand. With that being said, what we want to see today is three lessons. We want to see a debate, a challenge, and a correction. Okay, so basically James is on this whole section about if you say you are a Christian, but you don't act like a Christian, then you're not a Christian. Okay, it's as simple as that. All right, and so James gives this hypothetical, almost a ridiculous what if situation, right? And he says this: what if you or somebody in your church says, hey, you have faith? Or another person says, I have good deeds, right? Or I guess the modern translation of that, or modern version of that, would be like, I have the gift of faith. Which, in my perspective, you know, it's not a legit, I mean, it is a spiritual gift, you know, like, God has to give you faith because we by ourselves do not have faith, we have no power for faith. That's true, but the in the sense that James is trying to use it, that, oh, I have the gift of faith. If someone says that to you, you need to be respectful but gutsy enough to say, yes, that's good, but if you're a Christian, that everyone has that. That's not anything special. You know what I mean? Right? And so in the modern day version would be like someone saying that, oh yeah, I have this special gift of faith. What does that mean? You know? Oh, I have a special power to, like, when people say, you're a Jesus freak, I could be like, yes, I am. You know? It's very fuzzy. You know, it just makes you feel good, but if you actually push it, you're like, what does that really mean? No one really ever explains it, you know? On the flip side would be something like, oh, I have the gift of, here's a controversial gift, okay? I have the gift of administration. Okay. Now, mind you, to be organized as a Christian, whether you're a pastor or not, that's a good thing. Right? We need to be organized, okay? And we saw that, Hunter and Kristen and I, yesterday, right? Like, a kitchen that is organized is well-run, right? Because you know where everything is. If it's not organized, then what? You're going to take 15 minutes to find just where the knives are, right? Or you're going to take 15 minutes to find where the tomatoes are, right? But if it's organized, boom, there it is. Boom, there it is, right? Same thing. That's cool. But, really? I have a special spiritual gift of administration. Right, and this is kind of funny because I've said this before, and you know, kind of doing this study, I'm kind of like, I don't think that's a legit gift. I mean, if you're particularly organized, that's a good thing, right? And so this is what James is saying. Like, James is saying, hey, what if, like, you or somebody in your church are like, yeah, I have the gift of faith. Cool. What does that mean? What does that look like? On the other side, you got another guy saying, I have the gift of doing this, but I'm kind of weak on faith, right? James is kind of ridiculous. He's saying that. He's saying basically that if you have faith, number one, he's saying, if you're a Christian, if you are trusting in Jesus, then you have the gift of faith, okay? There is nothing you can do to create faith in ourselves, right? It has to be given to us, right? And then on the flip side, James says, if that is true, then your actions and your words need to kind of match what you're saying inside, right? Somebody once said Christian good deeds, okay? James is specifically talking about Christian good deeds, right? there's one guy said, I forgot who it was, but he said that Christian good deeds is an outward reflection of an inward reality, right? Meaning, if you really trusting in Jesus, then your actions must show it, must prove it, okay? And so James is saying that this is a ridiculous situation, it's stupid, and it doesn't make sense, okay? Furthermore, what the heck happened? Furthermore, it's extra, I guess, stinging, right? And a slap in the face to us because guess what? At one point or another, we've all said that one or two of the things. Oh, I have a special gift to this, or I have a special gift to this, but I don't have a gift to this. Right? James is saying, no. If you trust in Jesus, then you have been given the gift of faith. And if you have been given the gift of faith, then you must act. You must do something about it. Right? And this comes, I think, not as a coincidence, because we don't believe in coincidences. Because if you believe in a powerful God, you don't believe in coincidences or random chance. There's no way. God's way too big for that. Right? And so I don't think that we're going through this lesson by chance, because now we are, Johnny and I especially, are kind of coming to terms with, like, oh man, there's so much outward stuff that we can do in Fairfax. You know, and we have to do it. We're called, not as a church, but we are called as individual Christians to do something about it. Okay? Anyway, going to the second lesson, the challenge. The challenge. I like this quote by a professor. He said this, true faith cannot exist separately from works. And works, okay, you got that? True faith cannot exist separated from works. Okay? And then on the flip side, works acceptable in the sight of God cannot be performed without true faith. Okay? Meaning this, there is a distinct difference between good work that is done by a non-believer and good work that is done by a believer. Okay? Because philosophy tells us that honestly, if there is no God, there is really no, at the end of the day, real good reason why we should actually help anybody. Because if there's no God, it's all about me, myself, and I right now. And if somebody is in a bad situation, that's tough. Survival of the fittest. Right? I heard about this other idea, which is, yeah, you should help people. Either A, to make yourself feel good, or B, so that other people will look at you and go, oh man, Elliot. Right? But even then, like, your act of kindness is still at the end very selfish. Right? The Bible says, proposes a third alternative, which is that we do these good things, number one, because at the end of it all, those things are true about unbelievers, they're true about us. So we don't, number one, want to help other people, and number two, when we do help people, we do it for selfish reasons. And so the Bible says the only way you could do it out of a pure goodness, a true goodness, is only if God allows it to happen, right? Meaning, the only way Hunter and Kristen yesterday slices up, right, almost killing me many times with sharp objects, right, and cutting their fingers by cutting fruits and vegetables yesterday, and do it with a pure motive, is only if God allows it to happen, if God puts motion in their joints, in their bodies. Okay? And so their faith is putting, is not just the internal thing. What you're seeing yesterday is something that is an internal thing and is coming out in a physical, real way. Okay? And so the challenge of James is this. Oh, you're saying that you have faith, but then you don't really have much, you're not really strong in doing stuff. Or the other guy is saying, oh, you're really strong in doing stuff, but then you don't really have faith. James is saying, hey, guess what? This is the challenge. I'll show you the reality of my faith by my works. Right? That's a challenge to both ideas. Right? And it's And with basically what James is trying to say is, hey, guess what? If you're in any of those two ideas, like, oh, I'm good with faith. I'm good with, like, believing in God. That's a good thing. But like I said before, if you are trusting in Jesus, you already have that. It's not anything, like, spectacular or special, right? On the other hand, oh, yeah, I'm not really strong on faith, but I just do a lot of good things. Guess what? You're trying to earn your way into the kingdom. Right, you're like that young ruler that came to Jesus. Ever since I was a young boy, I've done X, Y, and Z. What other stuff do I need to do? Okay? James is saying, whether you're in this camp or in this camp, doesn't matter because you're not a Christian. You're playing church, but you're not a Christian. You're going to church, you're not a Christian. Right? Christian, did you know that you can actually go to church all your life and never be a Christian? In fact, you can actually go to seminary and be a pastor and never be a Christian. That's a scary thought. You can be a professor at a seminary and not be a Christian. It's true. It's true. That's why there's a joke. I don't know if Johnny's ever heard it. There's a joke amongst pastors and seminary students that many of the seminaries in our country, they're not really seminaries. We call them cemeteries. Okay? Spiritually dead. Nothing going on. Very sad. And so the third lesson we see is a correction. Okay, and I really like this example that James uses, and it I savor. Right? I used to like get, you know, because it's like, oh, this is one of those juicy ones that I can use it to just hammer people. Like, what the heck are you doing? But if I was really honest, man, I'm in that same camp. You know, which is this. James says, it's actually a frightening passage if you think about it. He's saying this. He's saying, you say you believe in God. Awesome. Demons do too. And they're scared out of their minds. If you read the Bible and you read the passages where Jesus comes across a demon-possessed person, the demons, they all recognize him. They all know who he is. They all, they're never wrong in their description of him, right? They call him the Son of God, the Most High, right? They're all Trinitarian, they're Presbyterian, they're Christocentric, they're everything. They're all of that. They're never wrong with their theology. That's not the problem. The problem is they acknowledge that all they do is they acknowledge God for who he is. And James brings that this point again, right? From last week, right? The last week James shows that main thesis point, and then he's bringing it to a close. He closes it in this passage with the same idea that hey, there is a fundamental difference in terms of what you call faith, right? What we call faith is not simply an acknowledgement. That's what the demons have. They have acknowledgement. They know who Jesus is. They know who God is. They know the Trinity. They know the whole thing. And James is saying, hey, you can go to church and you can give all the right answers. You can give all the squirrel answers. Right? But he's saying there's a difference between that and actually knowing. Or another way to say it is, James is saying there's a difference between your head knowledge and your heart knowledge. There's very little difference between the Greek language and the Hebrew language. The Old Testament is written in Hebrew, and the New Testament is written in Greek. There's very, very little similarity, okay? There's only one, there's only a couple times when there's it actually matches up in terms of like the stuff, the way it works. One of those examples is the word or the concept of knowing, okay? In the Hebrew, there's two kinds of knowing. In Greek, there is also two kinds of knowing. One is a head knowledge of facts. And then the other one is an experiential knowing, relational knowing. Right? So what you see is, in the Old Testament, where you see the passages where God says, I know you, I have known you by name. Right? Or Jeremiah chapter 1, he says, I knew you before you were born. Right? That word, you can actually translate as love. That's also the word that the Old Testament uses as the relationship between a man and a wife. Right? Guess what? In the Greek, same thing. There's a word that means knowledge in terms of head knowledge, stuff that you learn, like stats and information. And then there's a word that means knowledge in terms of relational knowledge. Like, I know Yoongi better now than what I did when I first got here. Right? English is very deficient in that way. We just take those two concepts and we just call it to know. Right? And so, that's what James is saying. A head knowledge is great, but if it's not coupled with the heart knowledge, it's useless. On the other side of that, if you have a heart knowledge, right? The Bible, it needs to go, the gospel comes here, goes to the brain, and it goes to the body, goes to the joints, right? If it goes, if it's just this, if what your faith is all about this, it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere. Right? The Apostle Paul, at one point, he says, knowledge puffs up. You know what that means? You know, like cotton candy? It's big, takes up a lot of space. But if you actually look at it, what is it? It's nothing. It's just air, right? It's a lot of air. Right? He says, Paul says, knowledge puffs up, but what? Love builds up. Right? And he's talking about a relational knowledge that is superior to a head knowledge. Right? And this, that's James exactly saying the same thing. If you know about God here, awesome. But if there is nothing here, no. And so it's scary to think. I don't know how many guys ever think about the last day when Jesus comes back. I think about it a lot. Sometimes it's pretty comical stuff, the thing that I think about, you know, like resurrection. I think it'll be kind of cool. Like, I'm going to be the one screaming it, right? You're like, whoa, I'm coming back to life. I'm like, whoa, I'm building it. Okay, but anyway, in the last days, one of the things that haunts me is how many Bible study teachers, pastors, professors, they know a lot of this. They got a lot of this. And so they, you know what the bad thing about people with a lot of this? They get huge egos. And we're going to see, oh man, that's a famous pastor. That's a famous preacher. That's my Bible study teacher. And they don't make it because they had none of this. Right? Matthew 7, I keep saying it again. Read that passage. Go home and read that passage. Matthew 7. Right? Lord, did we not, what? Do X, Y, and Z. If you look at the passage, if you look at what the description, you can't do those things unless you know things about God. That's very, very true. But Jesus says what? Get away from me. I never knew you. Right? And so James, right, using this, all these examples, is coming back home with that one main thesis idea, which is that your heart knowledge is what's important. You need to know God, not know about God. Right? We need to know God. Knowing about God is awesome, but it's secondary. It's to know God. To know God. Okay? And so, in closing, right? It's easy to go, oh yeah, I'm gifted in this, but I'm not gifted in this. Right? It's easy to kind of compartmentalize, you know? And I think it was kind of funny because at the Lamb Center yesterday where we were serving, we had a Bible study of about 10, 12 people, right? Going over the spiritual gifts. Okay, now that's a whole other topic. I'm not talking about that. Okay? But that got me thinking, right? And it's easy for us to be like, yeah, I'm particularly gifted in this, but you know what? I don't have too much of this. Right? For James, right, he's not talking about the specifics. He's talking about generalities. He's saying, no, if you have faith, then you act. Then you act. He's not talking about gifting, none of that stuff. He's saying, don't think about it, do it. Or another way to talk about, especially in this area, it's been going on ever since I was in college, which was what, early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, which is college people, right? Elliot. Everyone look at Elliot and blame him, okay? This is Elliot, okay? Which is college people go from jump from church to church to church to church. Because you go there, something's broken, you don't like it, and you leave. Oh, this church doesn't have this. This church doesn't do this for me. So I'm going to go to this church. Oh, you know what? This church got this new pastor. They're awesome. Let's go here. Oh, this church has this new praise team. Let's go here. You know, I came across on Facebook, of all things, this little sticker. It's an old couple. Right? And I think it applies to the church, too. It says, they were like married for like 60 years. And they're like, and the quote is, how did you stay so long? They say, they answer with, well, we're from the generation where if something's broken, you don't throw it away, you fix it. I think that's, you know, the same thing that we should do with the church. My main point being, one of the easiest way to figure out, okay, I have faith, I love Jesus, I am loved by Jesus, now what? When you're asking that question, what you do is you see a need. I guarantee you, if you're a Christian, you love Jesus, and you want to do something about it, pray. Say, God, I love you, I'm loved by you, what do I do? How can I help? I will guarantee you pray that prayer, you'll come to church, and you'll see things. You'll see problems, you'll see weakness. And the reason why God is showing you that is so that perhaps you can fill that need. You can do something about it. You know, my mama, the wise woman that she is, she says, if you ever get to a point where you want to complain to the pastor about something in the church, usually you should just shut up and do something about it before you complain. She says, you do something about it and then you still can't, you know, help, then you complain. But if you want to complain, the first thing you do is don't complain. Do something about it. Right? And so that's what it means to be a Christian who doesn't simply know things about Jesus, but a Christian who knows Jesus personally, experientially, relationally. Let's pray.